Okay, so this is going to be the first part of a two-parter on selling Olam Haba. If there's any part of Jewish lore, of Jewish tradition that moves a person, it is the selling of Olam Haba, the selling of Schar, which we find throughout many stories, legends, accounts about Klal Yisrael throughout our history, and it certainly plays a prominent role in this week's parasha with the selling of the Bechorah, the selling of the first rites, the selling of this spiritual entity that's not really a thing. You can't hold it. You can't do anything with it technically. And was Yaakov able to sell? So we want to argue tonight is we're going to discuss the opinions and the tradition that we have that we do sell Olam Haba. One can sell mitzos, one can sell schar, one can give it away in return for something else. So that's what we're going to argue tonight. And then next week, Bezos Hashem will argue the other side. But let's begin. The first question is a question of the Maharal. The Maharal and the Gur Aryeh and our Parsha ask, how is it possible to sell the Bechorah? What are you, you can sell like a spiritual right? The Maharal asks, can a Kohen sell his kahuna? What, it's not there to sell. What does that mean? What happened exactly? So we are familiar with the Baal HaTurim, right? The Baal HaTurim, Rav Yaakov ben Harash. So we know his short commentary on Chumash. That's the one with the gematrias and tells you how many times a word appears. That's the one everybody knows. But the Tur wrote an entirely different commentary. It's called the Tur HaArach, the long Tur. And that is what we call more of Parshanut. He gets more involved in explanations. It's longer, more deep, more details. So the Tur, Rav Yaakov ben Harash, he gives a lengthy explanation. He gives four or five different explanations to how it was possible to sell the Bechorah in the first place. So let's go through a number of them right now. He says the first answer is that Yaakov should have been the Bechor. Really, Yaakov should have been the first one. For whatever reason. He should have been the right one. And therefore, Yaakov didn't really take anything that wasn't his. Meaning he was kind of just acting out to secure the reality that was that he was the Bechor. Therefore, there wasn't really any transaction here. He was simply cementing the truth that he should have gotten the firstborn. That, so there wasn't a real sale. Two, he suggests that Yaakov knew that Yitzchak would give him the Bechorah, and therefore, since he wasn't really taking it from him, Yitzchak wasn't going to give it to him anyway, he was just buttressing his position, again, as the firstborn. That's like 1A and 1B, kind of like the same idea. Then he suggests that the zechus of the Bechorah is a svara. It's a logical thing. It's logical because the older brother should get the respect. However you feel about your older sibling, in the eyes of the Torah, the older sibling is supposed to be given some sort of kavod, right? Kaved esiva, kaved esavicha v'esimecha, eses l'rabos achi hagadol, es comes to include the older brother. So in this case, if it's a schus, if it's a schus that the older brother has, any kavod that should be given to anybody, so then can you be mochel that kavod? Can a parent be mochel? Can a parent forgive honor that's due to them? 100%, right? If a parent wants to allow the child to sit in their chair, they can be mochel on the kavod. So here, Yaakov didn't buy the Bechorah. What happened? Esav was mochel on the Bechorah. He said, I don't want it, it's yours. And therefore, again, there was no actual sale going on. And Esav is mochel. This actually fits into a tshuva of the Ramah. The tshuva of Ramah in Siman Ayin Ches learns that it was a mechila as well. And the Maharal also says that kahuna is in your DNA. You can't be mochel something that is in your DNA. A Kohen cannot be mochel on his kavod. A Kohen cannot say, oh, no, whatever, you know, you'll take Rishon, I'll be okay today. That's not allowed. A Kohen's not allowed to do such a thing. That you can't be mochel. But something that comes to you through honor or kavod, that you can give away. And therefore, says the Maharal, it makes sense that you can be mochel in such a case. Then the Tur cites his father. He cites his father, the Rush, who says the following question. This is really a question we're going to discuss next week, is a kinyan on a davar shelo bal olam. In halacha, you can't buy something that doesn't exist yet. You can't buy rights that are not presently in this world. You can't say, I'm going to be kona the fruit that your tree is going to produce in a year from now. You can be kona the tree, but you can't be kona the fruits separately from the tree. You can't buy something that is not in this world presently. So this is part of the discussion about buying somebody's schar and olam haba, right? A person says, I want to buy your olam haba, but it's not there yet. It hasn't materialized yet. You don't know what I'm going to do. You don't know what I'm not going to do. And therefore, you can't really buy it. That's a question for next week. So the Tur says, in the name of his father, I'll give you an exception to the rule. You can buy a davar shelo bal olam. You can buy something that doesn't exist yet if You make a shavu on it. If you the person takes an oath and says, I swear that I'm going to give you this thing that doesn't exist yet. In such a case, the kinyan works. This is the chiddush of the Rush. Now, it's a very big chiddush because we find nothing like this in Shas. The Rush seemingly made it up by himself. Now, there's a shuva of the Rif. And the Rif cites the shuvas of Yosef B'masa Mechasi, one of the Gaonim, in Siman Dalid, where he says that if you make a shvuah in front of Edom, and the shvuah can chal, the shvuah can work, even if there's no kinyan. So we also find in the Gaonim such an opinion that you can make, if you make a shvuah even without making a kinyan, even without doing an act to carry it through, it can still be good. And what's the source? The source is the sale of the Bechorah, from Esav to Yosef, from Esav to Yaakov. This is the source. If you make a promise, then it goes through anyway. And therefore that's what happens here. It was a sale. There was a real actual sale of the firstborn rights, but it came with an oath, and that's what pushed it through. The Tshuvas HaRivash was asked about the Shita of the Tur. So the Rivash writes in Siman Shin Chav Ches, he says, Lo Hayav Lo Nivra. There's no way the Rush would have said such a thing. It's such a ridiculous thing. We find nothing like this in Shas. If I make an oath, therefore I can tell you something that doesn't exist, it can't be, he says. So he suggests the reason the sale of the Bechorah worked is because it was before the Torah was given. The rules were different. How kinyanim and how sales and interactions worked was different. And therefore, that's why they could sell the Bechorah. The Ksos HaChoshen writes in Siman Reisha in Ches, he says that there was a concept of siluk. The concept of siluk means I remove myself from the item. I say, I don't want it. So what Esav was doing was he was saying, it's not mine. And therefore, once he said, it's not mine, Yaakov was able to come in and scoop up the Bechorah in such a case like this. And the Maharal says that Esav, whatever this means, I don't really understand this Maharal at all, but the Maharal says that Esav sold himself to Yaakov, like you sell a tree. Meaning, like we said before, I can't buy fruit that I haven't produced yet, but I can buy a tree that will produce fruit, and all the fruit that is produced from that tree are mine. So the Maharal says that Esav sold himself to Yaakov, and therefore all merit that Esav would generate would now go to Yaakov. I don't know what that means, but that's what the Maharal says. So we see there's already a discussion regarding the selling of the Bechorah. What about selling mitzvos? So the main discussion about this is the Gemara in Sota and Daf Chaf Alef. The Gemara in Sota asks that the Pasuk says, Boz yivozu lo, that people scorn certain things. So they're discussing what are people scorning, what do people not appreciate. And then the Gemara says that this does not refer to Shimon, the brother of Azariah, or not to Rabbi Yochanan, who was supported by the Nasi, rather refers to Hillel and Shavna. We know who Hillel was. He's famous. But he had a brother who's not so famous. His name was Shavna. And Hillel learned Torah, and his brother Shavna was in business. And Shavna said to Hillel, let us be partners. We'll make a shutfus. We'll make a Yisachar Zvulun. But we'll have to be careful about that term, because we have to know where to apply. But let's make a deal. Well, you'll learn Torah, and I'll support you. And we will split the rewards for what happens in this world and the next. We'll split it. And a voice came from Shemayim and said that if a person would give all of his wealth for Torah, so then I'll scorn him. Yivozu, I won't like that, says Hashem. Meaning, how could you give away schar? How could you give away infinite schar to somebody else? So the implication of the Gemara seems to be, or one can learn from the Gemara, that one, maybe you can give away schar, or maybe you can't, maybe you shouldn't give away schar, because that's considered a bizayon of the ultimate reward, the endless reward of Olam Haba. So comes the Beis Yosef, in Yerodein Siman Reish Mem Vav, in Hilchas Talmud Torah, and he says, if someone doesn't know how to learn Torah, or they don't have time to learn Torah, what can you do? Pay somebody to learn for you. And the Ramah says, in the name of Rabbeinu Yerucham, one of the great Ashkenazi poskim, that doing so makes it as if he learnt it himself. It's as if I split the money and you learn Bava Basra, it's as if I learned Bava Basra as well. It's the same thing as Shemayim. And a person can create a partnership where he pays for the livelihood of a person to learn Torah, and in return he splits the reward of the person's Torah. However, and this is the key, if the individual would have been able to learn on his own, the person is independently wealthy, and he can learn all day by himself. And you come and say, well, you know, here's $10,000, I want a piece of your learning. Does the person who gives the $10,000 get schar? No. Why? Why not? You haven't enabled anything. He would have learned by, he was fine. The guy runs hedge funds and he's good for the rest of his life and everything is fine and wonderful. I don't need your $10,000. I'm A-okay. If you are not assisting and taking somebody who couldn't learn and now allows them to learn, then you haven't generated any schar. And this is the important point of, for example, when we do extra mitzvos for someone who is sick, or we do extra mitzvos in the memory of somebody, you cannot take a pre-existing mitzvah that you're already going to do and then kind of tack on schar for it. I was going to the shir anyway, so like, you know, there should be a refuah shleima for this one. Then you haven't done anything different. You were going to the shir already. The whole way schar is generated, the whole way reward is generated, is when you do something extra and you show Hashem, look, this was not going to happen before. Look what I did in the merit of this person, and now I get schar for it. But if it was going to happen anyway, so then what did you do? So the same thing here. I was going to be learning from, you know, 9 to 9 every day anyway. So you gave me $10,000. Does that change anything? No. If I would have had to go and then get a job, and now I can learn because you're going to pay me money, so then says the Ramah, that's when you get schar. That's how Yisachar Zvulun works. Yisachar Zvulun works because if it wasn't for me paying this guy learning, he wouldn't be able to learn. I've enabled him to do something he wasn't capable of doing before. And that is an important principle in understanding how this works. One of the Torah journals from Rav Asher Weiss is based in the Kovetz Torah in Chelek Yud. He has a whole write-up of how to write a proper Yisachar Zvulun, if you actually want to do it. The shtar and the rules and how to do it, it's all there. So comes the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, but not in his Perush on the Torah, in his commentary on Maseches Brachos called the Chafetz Hashem. So he writes that if the Talmud Chacham who's assisted in his Torah studies by the support of a sponsor has to share his reward in Olam Haba with the sponsor. That's the rule. We have to split Olam Haba. And in his work Rishon Litzion and Yerodea, he says the arrangement of Shimon and Azariah is an example of two people who mutually share the fruits of their labors, meaning they're dividing equally what they get. I'm giving you some of my work money, and you're giving them some of your Torah, what they couldn't have done alone on their by themselves. And they bring other proofs. The Truest Mishkan Betzalel and Os Mem brings a proof from the Gemar Nechulim Pei Zayin that says that Rebbe invited a tzeduki to eat, somebody who wasn't Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, to come eat. So Rebbe offered him 40 gold pieces if he would decline to drink wine, which they were going to bench. Meaning Rashi says that Rebbe wanted to buy the schar of the 4 amens that were going to be answered by benching when they would bench. So what do we see from here? You can pay money for the schar of the mitzvah. I want to buy your amens. That's what Rashi is saying. I want to buy the amens you're going to say during benching. Okay. So let's now go through an interesting history, or a number of well-known or some not well-known stories of people who have sold their Olam Haba. Okay? So let's begin. This is one of my favorite stories. Rav Simcha Levin, who's the son of Rav Ari Levin, the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim. So he tells a great story that in 1983, Simcha Raz told him this story. Simcha Raz is the famous author of Rav Kook's biography, and he's wrote the biography of Ari Levin and Tzaddik in Our Time. So Simcha Raz is an author and a well-known writer in Eretz Yisrael. So in Avrech, a young guy in Kollel came up to Simcha Raz one day and said that he heard a story that when Simcha Raz was an officer in the Golani Brigade, that he had an argument with a gentleman named Rechavim Ze'evi. Rechavim Ze'evi is a major figure in Eretz Yisrael. Was a major figure in Eretz Yisrael. He was known as Gandhi. His nickname was Gandhi. He was a major figure in the army and in Eretz Yisrael. So Simcha Raz and Rechavim Ze'evi, Gandhi, were in the same brigade. And he said, I heard that you signed away, that he signed away his Olam Haba to you on a piece of paper. So Simcha Raz said, yeah, it's true. We were in the brigade together, and we were having an argument about Emuna and Hashem. And he turned to Gandhi and said, Rechavim Ze'evi, and he said, what's going to be with you after 120 years? What's your Olam Haba going to be like if you act this way? So Gandhi picked up some toilet paper, some tissues, and he wrote on it, Ani matir shani notein es chalki ba'olam haba l'simcha raz. You wrote about Olam Haba here? You have my whole Olam Haba. He wrote it to him on a piece of paper. So, and that's what Simcha Raz told this young man. So the young man turned to him and said, I'm Gandhi's son. So Simcha Raz almost fell over. This guy's a breslov of Chassid. Pay us the whole thing. You're his son? How could it be? So he said that my father had a bit of change. He was not 100% frum, but he started putting on tefillin, and he wants his note back. He would like his, he wants his promissory note back of Olam Haba. So, and he didn't realize what he was giving away. So Simcha Raz told the young man, I have to think about it. I'm not so sure. I want to give it back to you. I got to think about it. So that night, the Avrich came back. The Breslov Rav Chassid came back and knocked on the door and he said, no, I need to know now because what if my father passes away tonight? He's an older man by now. What's going to be? Like, you know, what if he dies in his sleep? Who knows what's going to be? I need to know now. I need to get it back. So Simcha Raz asked a Shaila what to do and they got answers back and forth and he agreed he should give it back to him. But Simcha Raz wanted to make a point to Gandhi. He didn't want him to think that Olam Haba is something cheap. You exchange it like you play with the baseball cards. This one gets this one, this one gets that one. It's not cheap. So he said, I'll give it back to you on condition that you go and learn with Uri Zohar, the famous the famous actor who became a Baal Tshuva. If you go and learn a little bit with Uri Zohar and you learn about what it means to have Olam Haba, then I'll give you back the notes. And that's what happened. He gave it back to him. So, introductory story to selling Olam Haba. In Rav Zevin, in Sipurei Chassidim, Parshas Kiseitze, tells a beautiful story about selling Olam Haba. I'll read you the story. This is from the Archival Translation. We'll read it quickly, but they write it over in a beautiful way. It's word for word the same thing in the Hebrew. So, a once prosperous merchant who had lost his entire fortune came to Rav Avraham Yeshua Heschel of Apta, the Apta Rav, with a request that he intercede on his behalf, and advise him what to do. He had a daughter of marriageable age, and hardly a penny left to his name. The tzaddik asked him how much he needed and how much he had. And he told him that he needed 1,000 rubles for the wedding and a dowry, and in his pocket he had 1 ruble. So the Apta Rav said, go in peace, take up the first transaction that comes your way, and Hashem will help you. So, a strange instruction. But he listened to his Rebbe. So, he went to an inn, and he arrived at an inn where he found one that was frequented by dealers of gems, diamond dealers. And he approached a table, which a group of them were crowded, and examining diamonds. And the Jewish dealer asked him, what are you looking at over here? Are you interested in buying some diamonds? So, the guy with 1 ruble said, I am. I want to buy something. So, he asked him, how much money do you have? So he said, I have 1 ruble. So they all start laughing hysterically. The guy's out of his mind. He's going to buy diamonds for a ruble. The guy's crazy. So he said, the guy was had a bit of chutzpah. So the dealer said to him, listen here, I've got a deal for you. For 1 ruble, I'll give you all my Olam Haba. So the chassid, the Apta Rav, said, sure, we're good. You put it in writing, whatever you want, put it in writing, you promise your Olam Haba, give it to me and I'll give you it for a ruble. And they do it, they write it up, a full contract, they give you my Olam Haba, in exchange for a ruble, they sign the names, and everything is good. So, the guy is now down to zero, he has no money now, he has his guy's Olam Haba, he picks up a gemara and he goes to sit down, he doesn't know what to do now. So a few minutes later, a woman walks in, and she walks over to the man and says, are you the person who bought my husband's Olam Haba for ruble? So she said that the truth is all of his wealth came to him through the estate that she inherited. And she asked what they were laughing about, and she said that I sold my Olam Haba. So she told her husband, so just in case you did have a share in the Olam Haba, you have to go and sell it, and now you're going to have nothing? She said, I'm not going to live with a man who doesn't have Olam Haba. I want a bill of divorce right now. I want to get right now. So the guy said, whoa, it's a little bit rash. Whatever, we'll figure it out. She said, no, you go back to him right now, and I want you to get that money. I want you to get your Olam Haba back, whatever it costs. So the guy said that, so the guy comes back in, with his wife is now in tow, and the person who was poor said, a business is business, and I wasn't joking. If you want it back, I got to make money off of it. So he said, I'm going to pay you more for a little bit of paper. He says, that's crazy. So the wife is standing in the back, and the wife says, even if he wants 5,000 rubles, you better pay him back for that Olam Haba. So the guy doesn't know what to do. So he tells him the whole story that the Apta Rav told me I have to do the first deal. This is the first deal, and I'm not leaving here until I get $1,000 to pay for my daughter's wedding and the dowry. And the guy says 5 rubles, 20 rubles, no, and they up and up and up, and finally he has no choice. His wife won't let him have it in any other way, and the guy signs over $1,000 to buy back his olam haba. So the wife sees what's going on, and she turns to this stranger and says that she wants to speak with the Apta Rav. So he said, "Of course, we'll go together." So they arrive there, and the woman says to the Rebbe, "I'm of course pleased that through my agency such good fortune should come my way of a poor Jew. But I have one question: is my husband's olam haba even worth $1,000? Now, is it? What was the whole point of all this?" So the tzaddik said, "At the time of the sale, when he sold his share in olam haba for the price of a ruble, it wasn't even worth that 1 ruble." But at the time of the second sale, when he had to fight to get it back, and it was worth something to him, and he cared about olam haba, so that 1,000 rubles was much more. It was worth that much more than 1,000 rubles. He helped a Jew. He gave tzedakah through it, and therefore, no money can measure its worth. So that is another famous story of a full sale of olam haba. We'll tell some more stories. The Otzi Yisrael records that the Moorei Naim came to a city. There was no mikvah, so he asked in the city, "How come there's no mikvah?" And they said, "Because we don't have any money, but there's a wealthy person who won't give us any money to build the mikvah." So the Moorei Naim went to the home of this stingy individual, and he asked if he would contribute to the mikvah. So the man turned to the Moorei Naim and said he would promise his chelik in olam haba, if the Moorei Naim would give him his chelik in olam haba, he would pay for the mikvah. So the Moorei Naim said that every single day I say, uvachol me'odach, with all my money. But I don't have any money. And now this is a place where I have something of value, my olam haba, and I can serve Hashem and sacrifice it for the sake of the klal. And he sold his olam haba to this man, and the guy paid for the mikvah. Okay, that's the third story. In the introduction to the Sefer Menuchas Asher, which is written by a Hasidic Rav, he says that he had a Kabbalah, that whenever the Noam Elimelech, the Rebbe of Lizhensk, heard of a mikvah or a Beis HaMedrash or a Beis HaKnesses that needed to be built but they were lacking in funds, he would walk into his own Beis HaMedrash and say that we're going to sell off my Olam Haba right now. And the Hasidim would have a bidding war to buy the Olam Haba of the Noam Elimelech. And whatever the highest bidder was, he would take that money and he would go and donate it to build whatever that institution was. And he would do this a number of times throughout his life. So the author notes about this story, v'yesh lehispalei. One can be bewildered. L'chora al hanhaga hamu'ula hazos. This is a very lofty practice. V'ala b'libi lomar kavana amuka al hanhaga hazos. Must be something very deep about this practice. Another story. Wrote Tzvi Yecheskel Michelson in the Pinos Habayis, records a story about the Vilna Gaon. This story is over 100 years old about the Vilna Gaon. That one year there was a severe shortage of esrogim in Europe. It seems like almost every year there was a shortage of esrogim in Europe. But one year there was a shortage of esrogim in Europe, and the Vilna Gaon couldn't get an esrog. And finally, the Talmidim are searching all over the different towns in Europe to get one, and they find a guy who has an esrog. So they tell him, "We want to buy an esrog for the Rav Eliyahu of Vilna, the great Gaon." And the guy says, "I'll sell you that esrog on one condition," which I'm sure you can now fill in the blank, "that I get the schar, the olam haba, that the Vilna Gaon will generate in using that esrog. I don't want everything, I'm not greedy. I just want the schar that he's going to generate through using that esrog." So they said, "We have no choice." They agreed to it. They went back to the grow. They said, "We found you an esrog." He was so excited, but he told them, "There's one condition. You don't get any schar because we sold the schar to the guy who we bought the esrog from." So the Gra said, "That's amazing. My whole life, I never had a chance to fill a mitzvah totally lishma, only to do the mitzvah with no reward. And therefore now, besimcha, I'm able to fulfill the mitzvah of esrog purely out of avas Hashem." So that wasn't even a chassid. That was a misnagdisha, ma'isa bat salam al haba. So at least we balance the sides. It's not only chassidim. Okay, we'll tell another chassidish one as well. There is a story in Berdichev. This is one of my favorite sukkah stories. So there's a story in Berdichev that Rav Levi Yitzchak wanted an esrog. There was no, not even for Levi Yitzchak, there was no esrog in the whole town of Berdichev that year. And on Erev Sukkos, there was a man coming through who was traveling to his hometown a number of miles away. And he said, they found him, they said, "Do you have an esrog?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "Would you be willing to stay for the first days of Sukkos in Berdichev so the town could fulfill the mitzvah of esrog? And the Rebbe, Rav Levi Yitzchak, could use the esrog as well." So the guy said, "No, you don't understand. I got to get home. Sukkos is coming. I want to be with my family. I'm not going." So they said, no, no, please, please, please. And Rav Levi Yitzchak got involved and eventually convinced the man. And the traveler agreed to stay in Berdichev and return to the Olam Haba of the Kedusha slavery of Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. And they agreed to it. So the guy went to the inn to get ready for Yantif, intending to stay there for Sukkos. And they were very happy, now they have an Esrog. So Rav Levi Yitzchak then sent a message to everybody in the town telling them that the man with the Esrog cannot gain entry to anybody's Sukkah. You can't let him eat in your Sukkah, he has to eat outside the Sukkah. And the same instructions went all over the place. So when the traveler found out, he tried to go from Sukkah to Sukkah, and it didn't work out, he ran to Rav Levi Yitzchak, and he screamed at him, this is how you repay me, I gave you an Esrog, and this is how you repay me, I can't sit in the Sukkah over Sukkahs. So Rav Levi Yitzchak said, I'll make you a deal. If you give me back my Olam Haba, when I use your Esrog, I'll let you sit in the Sukkahs and listen to everybody's Sukkah. So the guy starts screaming, he had no choice. In the end, it was obvious, as much as he wanted to get the Olam Haba of the Kedushas Levi, he also wanted to sit in the Sukkah. So he said, fine. So the next day, Rav Levi Yitzchak invited this guest, along with the other Jews of Berdichev, to his Sukkah. And Rav Levi Yitzchak turned to the traveler and said, so now, I assure you that you'll indeed have part of my Chelek and Olam Haba. When I first made the promise to you, you didn't deserve it. But now that you are someone who's ready to be Moser Nefesh, you were willing to give up a mitzvah for the Olam Haba, it shows that since you were willing to give it away, it shows that something is valuable to you. That you're ready to protect it, to do a mitzvah, that shows you value the real reward of Olam Haba. So, how many stories is that so far? It's like five or six. We've got a lot of proofs that you can tell Olam Haba. We'll tell one more story. This is a long story, but we're going to tell it quickly. This is a story in the Sefer Adas Tzadikim. It's a long story, but essentially the story goes as follows. There was two business partners. They were engaged in selling of textiles and fabrics, and they were in a town once, and they were doing business with a wealthy non-Jew, and they had exchanged all the materials. They had the fabric, and they were going to pay him for a lot of money for the fabric, and one of the partners was very handsome, as the story goes, a very good-looking guy. And the other partner went to town to take care of some last-minute business before they were going to go away. And the wife of the non-Jewish guy they were dealing with business, he said, seduced him. And he sinned with this woman. And he kept it to himself. And they leave the town. They're going on their way. And the guy is breaking. He's crying. And the guy says, what's going on? What could be so terrible? Why are you crying? He said, I don't want to talk about it. Eventually, the guy broke down and he said, what happened? I had committed this terrible avera. I don't know what to do. The guy couldn't get over it. He said, you'll do tshuva, whatever. You'll figure it out. So he couldn't get over it at all. So his partner said, I'll make a deal with you. I'll buy your avera. Oh, I forgot to say this part. Part of the deal was that if he sinned with this woman, she would get her husband to forgive the price of all the textiles. That was part of the chap of the deal. So he says, I'll pay you for your avera. I'll pay you for however much we would have spent on that textile, and I'll pay you for the avera. So the avera will be on. You'll pay me for that avera. So the avera will be on my account, and you'll get money in exchange for it. And that's what we'll do. The guy said, really? So sure, you're a great friend. They shake on, everything is good. So essentially that leads to a big discussion. They ended up in the city of the Maharsha, the famous Maharsha. They ended up in that city, and that led to a big din Torah, because the guy had eventually passed away, the one who bought it, and he came to his friend in a dream, and he said, now I'm being punished in Shemayim for an aver I didn't do, because I bought it from you. And the Maharsha had a whole big discussion. They had a din Torah, did it work, did it not work. Again, another story, not a Hasidic story. It's before Hasidim, but it's certainly another story about the selling of Olam Haba. So we see, within the history of Klal Yisrael, there is a strong, strong tradition of at least legends and telling of stories of the selling of Olam Haba. It seemingly happens all the time. But even in the poskim, I'm going to be honest with you, it is the minority of poskim. I'll quote three tshuvas that I know of that discuss the ability to sell Olam Haba or to sell Schar. The first is the tshuva Shari Shemayim and Chelek Dalet. He says there is some form of sale, and he says that if you hear of someone who wants to sell their Olam Haba, you should buy it right away. It's a good deal. It's a Kiddush Hashem, and go and get it. So that's one. The second is Rav Meshulam Harwitz, the Rav of Stanislav, in the Tshuvas Bar Levi in Yeridea on page Samach Dalet. He says that once the mitzvos are yours, you can choose to do whatever you want with them. You buy somebody's mitzvos, they're yours, and you can decide how to use them in any way. And finally, the Tshuvas Shulchan Malachim on page Reishin Hay says that you can seal the deal with just a handshake, and that's enough to sell one's Olam Haba. So what we argued tonight, at least for part one, is that there is a tradition and a seemingly reality of selling one's Olam Haba. And we'll stop here. And next week, we will see the other side of the case. Many, 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 many poskim that argue with this and say it is not feasible at all. And then hopefully we'll tell an amazing tshuva of the Ritbaz in the city of Slutsk and a story about selling Olam Haba and how it didn't work exactly out to plan. Okay, we'll stop here.